Tell me now, do you want it? Cause these dancing feet don't... Chalk it up to, it's hard to simulate what these guys are going to go against in the game. I mean, we did our best in terms of trying to put them through enough, and certainly had them going in practice. But still, the game is, it's a different speed.
Packers head coach Matt LaFleur from earlier today sort of clarifying the injury to Zach Tom. So Packers starting tackle, best offensive lineman on the field, perhaps you could argue. Compromised during practice throughout the week because of an oblique injury. Left the game after the first play from scrimmage and did not return. And everybody thought the worst. Oh boy, here you go. Re-aggravated the oblique injury. And LaFleur sort of clarified it today, though he was kind of irritated, it sounded like, that Tom was even put in the situation to play yesterday, though I'm sure LaFleur knew about it going in. But saying, look, it just couldn't keep going. It just couldn't keep going. And all of a sudden, the Packers had some massive shuffling to do. Aaron Banks also leaving the game. The shuffling continues against a strong defense, and it was an absolute disaster for the offensive line yesterday. Greg and Gary with you. It's Pottawatomie Sportsbook Football Monday. I wanted to welcome in Jason Wilde. Wilde and Tausch, 9 to noon across ESPN Wisconsin. Wilde, good evening.
Hi, guys. How are you?
You doing well. So we kind of analyzed some of the offensive woes here from yesterday, and certainly Jordan Love had a bad moment in the fourth quarter, but four quarters of bad moments for the offensive line. That was a rough one yesterday, and it started early with Zach Tom. I know you talked to Matt LaFleur at length in his press briefing today about some of the shuffling on the offensive line, the personnel he had available. What do you make of that situation and where we stand today?
Yeah, I mean, look, I talked to Zach on Friday, and I kind of joked that he basically had a tiny little Zach Tom on each shoulder pad. And one was saying, hey, your team needs you. Also, they gave you an $88 million contract. They're playing against Myles Garrett and a really good defensive front. You got to give it a shot. And the other side of him was saying, you don't do him any good if you don't play well. And you still are having trouble running without pain. And so I was stunned when he was active. I mean, we were doing Green Bay game day, and I was absolutely shocked. And I guess I was right, which doesn't happen very often, because he lasted one play. I mean, remember how angry Matt LaFleur was last year in Chicago when Jair Alexander said he could play, and then he played 10 snaps against the Bears and then pulled himself out? Did you see how the Fox cameras found Zach Tom on the sideline? And I don't know about you, but it sure looked to me like he was actually in tears on the sideline, knowing he'd let his team down by only being able to play one snap. Gray Rugemer is on the sideline trying to console him. He's got his face in a towel. I don't feel like Matt LaFleur clarified anything today. Greg, I still don't understand how that happens. Like, your job, as a medical staff, as a coaching staff, is to protect players sometimes from themselves. And they should have said, no, Zach, we're not letting you play. Matt LaFleur's explanation that you can't simulate what it's like in a game, even though you try to during the week, no kidding. It's different when the other guys are getting paid to knock your block off. And I was stunned that they allowed him to play. And this is a medical staff that historically has always been conservative. And I know, that Dr. McKenzie has kind of passed the torch to Dr. Mike Ryan, who's going to be his successor. But I'm still confused as to how Matt LaFleur turned in a list of inactives, which was only three players long anyway, because they only have 51 guys on the active roster because they put two guys on IR without replacing them. I thought that was a terrible mistake. Whoever is to blame for that, and I know Zach Tom bears some responsibility, but you can't allow that to happen. And I don't think this will be an issue on Sunday night, because I think Zach Tom's going to be inactive. He's going to have the bye week, and then they're going to hope that has healed itself before they play after the bye against Cincinnati.
Yeah, you almost never see that in today's NFL. I think most of the 32 teams always are overcautious now about players' availability because most certainly they're making a lot of money. And when you lose these guys, you don't lose them forever from some stupid mistake with an oblique that turns into something else. I was surprised too. But I guess my biggest question then, because fallout from that would be then Jordan Morgan, because now you flipped him over to right tackle, but you've had Kennard over there, you've had Belton over there. And I know that Jordan had been there at some point doing training camp, but that then caught me by surprise. I thought for sure it would have been Belton or Kennard at right tackle to start with.
Yeah, and Gary, I asked Matt LaFleur very pointedly today, are you spreading Jordan Morgan too thin? And he basically said, yeah, we have to consider that. I felt like they felt good enough about Anthony Belton. Like, it's fascinating to me that they have now managed to surprise me in successive weeks with how they've approached playing right tackle, right? Like,
yes.
Not only
yes.
did they play Zach Tom when I didn't expect them, but the first week that Zach Tom didn't play after he was injured, you know, he gets hurt against the Lions, and they go to Darian Kennard, Dolly Parton's long-lost cousin, which I still can't believe that was in his bio with the Eagles, a guy who has three Super Bowl rings and had played in three career games in those 3 years when they traded for him. And, you know, they go to him for 15 snaps, and then when the game is decided against the Lions, you know, they put in Anthony Belton for three snaps. But the following week, on a short week with no real practices, I thought, well, there's no way they're going to go to the rookie without any practice whatsoever and only walkthroughs. And lo and behold, there's the rookie. And then they tell us that they felt really good about how Anthony Belton played. And so, of course, when Zach Tom only plays one snap, well, it's got to be Anthony Belton that goes in. No!
Right?
It's not. Yep. It's the first-round pick from 2024, Jordan Morgan. And then... Then they have a situation where they lose Aaron Banks to a groin injury, which Matt LaFleur said after the game wasn't the same groin injury that he'd suffered against the Lions, but I'm not so sure that's true. You got a different groin injury? So now you got to move the guy that's playing right tackle for you. Now he's the backup at left guard, so you got to move him. Then you bring Anthony Belton in at right tackle. And then Rashid Walker has cramps or something and misses a couple of plays. So now you got to move Anthony Belton to left tackle so you can play Darian Kennard at right tackle. And now you've got three guys out of five that are playing in replacement of somebody else. And then, oh, by the way, it's against one of the best defensive fronts in the league. The Browns don't have a lot of things going for them, but their defensive line is one of them. That was a you-know-what show, and it was exhibited by the fact that they gave up five sacks, and Jordan Love, that ties a career high of sacks that he's absorbed in a single game, and the guy only was sacked 14 times last season. Now, all that said, one of those sacks, not the offensive line's fault, why they snapped the ball at the end of the third quarter just so Jordan Love could take an 11-yard sack and doesn't throw the ball away, that's another issue to be discussed at some point as well.
Some head-scratching plays, indeed, no doubt. You put it all together, and you understand why Josh Jacobs has, you know, 1.9 yards a carry, right? Mm-hmm. And in 3.1 on the season. Jason, how much of that is, in your opinion, Jacobs being the top name on the scouting report for opposing teams' defenses and the inconsistency and constant shuffling on the Packers' offensive line?
Yeah, I think it's that. I don't think that Josh Jacobs has suddenly become, Gary Ellerson or something. And I mean Gary Ellerson now. You were a great player when you were a young man, but you know now you're around that 60 mark, and we can't expect you to be out there. I love you, man. Come on now. That said. I think the biggest thing is that defenses are basically saying, hey, we're not going to let your running back beat us, right? We're going to play single high safety, and if your quarterback and your skill position guys can force us out of that, more power to them, and then we'll go to two safeties and play more umbrella stuff because we don't want your passing game to beat us. And look, in fairness to Jordan Love, he's hit some balls down the field, right? He hit one to Romeo Doubs in the first game. He hit one to Malik Heath in the second game. Didn't hit any on Sunday, and so that's a problem. But I think it's mostly, you know, and again, I get so frustrated with this subset of Packers fans that think any criticism of Jordan Love, who I feel like takes more responsibility for his mistakes than either of his two predecessors who are in the Hall of Fame or going to be in the Hall of Fame. So I don't think I'm harsh on Jordan, and I'm certainly not more critical of him than he is himself. But, like, he can't throw that pick, right? He knows that. Yeah. And Matt LaFleur can say it was a bad call by him, and that's true. But as LaFleur said to us today when I asked him about it, you know, we tell our quarterbacks, don't make a bad call worse. And that's what Jordan did there. But they are basically saying, hey, I hear Mark Tauscher put a bet on Jordan Love winning the MVP. Well, if this guy's going to be in the MVP conversation, he's got to be able to throw these guys out of single high safety so their running back can be more productive. And so far, they haven't done it consistently enough that any of the three defenses have said, okay, Uncle, we're going to back off now, and you guys can run the ball against us because we can't have your quarterback beating us down the field so much.
No, you're exactly right. That's the MO for the rest of the year, is we're taking eight away, and 10, you got to figure out how to beat us. And that's going to be every game until he decides to do it. I will say this, from a running back, offensive line standpoint, you know, when they go to in training camp, they do 7-on-7, and everybody goes down and watches 7-on-7 drill and watch all the highlight throws, this, that, and the other. And normally down on the other end is normally inside zone, right? It's normally the running backs and the offensive linemen, with the defensive line. We're doing like an inside zone drill against the defense. I don't know if they do it anymore, but that's how we used to do that particular, setup. And what we're trying to accomplish is the running back is really trying to get a mesh point with the offensive lineman. And the offensive lineman, mm-hmm. there's no passer being thrown, and the offensive lineman are trying to figure out, okay, double team second level. And it feels like the timing with the running backs, with the offensive lineman, it's not there, and those guys are not. And the reason why you don't get the 6, 7, 8 yard runs from your running backs, because now your linemen are not getting to the second level, and that has hurt them. Also, when you have a revolving door of all those things that you just mentioned no longer 2 or 3 minutes ago, no wonder the run game is not good, because they don't really have a mesh point into knowing where the soft spot is or where they're supposed to be in the run game. There's nobody practicing.
Yeah, again, if you look at where their run game is and where their offensive line is, I think we can all agree their running back's still good. No one thinks that this is a Josh Jacobs problem. But as you well know, look, he's not the first running back in NFL history to be so good that defense has said, we're going to load up the box and we're going to try and stop him and make that our priority. There are still, and look, I've seen, you know, the offensive line that Tausch was on when Amon Green was going great guns, right? I mean, that 2003 season when he had 1,800 yards plus, you don't think that there were loaded boxes that he was running against?
Yeah, absolutely.
Of course there were. And they still found a way to do it because of the running back and because that offensive line was effective in its blocking. They have to be able to – it can't just be, oh, Jordan, throw them out of it. At some point, it's also got to be, hey, if they're going to do this, we got to be better. We got to be able to get to the second level and get the next guy after we get our first guy and give our guys some space to run. I mean, look, you guys – I mean, I know, you know, Gary, you and I have talked about this in the press box. Like, that stat from last year about 1,329 rushing yards for Josh Jacobs, and like 55% of it was after contact. And yes, the fact that Saquon Barkley had 1,328 yards, 1 yard fewer, before being touched, before contact, mm-hmm. on his 2,000-yard season, you have to give Josh Jacobs more of an opportunity to gain a few yards before he gets hit. And they're not Correct. Doing that, whether it's the defense, whether it's their passing game, or whether it's their offensive line giving him the opportunity by blocking their guys.
One thought I have here, because I think this it's a new team and it's evolving. It feels like it's going to be a defensive team. I think Matt LaFleur now needs to change his mind in how he called plays and rely a little bit more on his defense. Because clearly, was that Stefanski? Clearly Stefanski knows that the Cleveland Brown team starts in with that defense, and he called that game as to say, I'm relying on my defense. They're going to stop, and we'll just see how many chances we can get to try to get a touchdown. I don't think Matt LaFleur has come around to that part yet about his defense.
No, I think you're exactly right. And the criticism that he deserves is that. And I asked him that too today, right? I mean, I
oh, my goodness. Look at you, Jason.
I feel like I was kind of a jerk today. But, hey, I did.
Jerk
there were
weed.
Questions
that's
that
good.
You lose games. That's an homage to Bruce Willis when he takes this under advisement and he sends the computer with the C4 down the elevator shaft. But look, it's third and three. I know what he's thinking. Hey, we're going to complete this easy pass. We're going to get the first down, and we're going to go win the game. And we're going to run out the rest of the clock. They had one timeout left at that time. That's his mentality. But to your point, because Tausch argued the same thing, and that is, hey, you've got a really good defense, and they got a crummy offense. You run it into the line. Maybe Josh Jacobs gets more than 1.9 yards, which he averaged yesterday. Maybe he gets the three and he gets the first down, and then he can run out the clock. And if he doesn't, your great punter kicks it 65 yards. Let's say he booms a 75-yarder that goes into the end zone, and it's a touchback. Do we really think that a Browns team with no timeouts starting at its own 20-yard line can drive 80 yards for the game-tying touchdown? No, right? But again, he makes that decision, and then Jordan Love makes it worse by throwing the pick.
I got a lot to be mad about.
Piles
right now
of mistakes yesterday.
I really do.
And oh, by the way, 14 penalties, plenty on offense, plenty on defense to allow drives that weren't
what
really
about special
going
teams?
Anywhere. Well, that was the
we,
best
we got,
team,
we
right?
Got, we got like, special
we
teams,
even get
coach,
into that yet.
That we're paying a boatload of money to, that we thought that could get this thing straightened out, that is causing you get. My least worry coming into this game was Whelan and McManus. They didn't even think about those two guys.
Well, and even on the left side of the line of scrimmage here, like I'm pretty sure that the goal is for Tucker Kraft to get a hand on somebody who's charging in from the opposite side on the edge, and he whiffed. He flat out whiffed. Not being talked about enough today. People are trying to analyze the angle and the trajectory of Brandon McManus's kick. Tucker Kraft whiffed on the left side of the line, right? It opened the door. Just here you go. Have at it, right? And it helps change the game. A collection of mistakes, one seemingly compounding the other. And in an assortment of penalties, which has been a three-game issue here, Jordan Love's pick, one-game issue, but I understand it can point back to other games. Bad throw, terrible play call, all the things we talked about. Offensive line play, one bad game out of three, still feels a little unsettled to me. But the penalties, my goodness. I mean, that is what 14. Will make a coach rip their hair out, because these are non-aggressive penalties. These are dead ball penalties. These are before the ball is even snap penalties mixed in with some of the others. So, yes, we probably could have gone for 2 hours on the collection of mistakes.
Sorry, Jason.
We likely will here for the rest of the program.
Yeah.
All right, now I feel like a jerkweed. God darn it. All
is
right,
it
well,
jerkweed or jackweed?
It's jerkweed. It's from the Christmas movie, Die Hard. It's a cult classic. Jason Wilde, ESPN Wisconsin's Wilde and Tausch, 9 to noon. Further analysis on this game and looking ahead to the Cowboys matchup on Sunday, check out he and Tausch tomorrow morning at 9. Appreciate it, Wilde. Thanks so much.
It is a Christmas movie. I couldn't agree with you more. All right, guys. Take care. Be good.
All right.